Now, it's time for Brian Barrett on WEEI.
Hill will not be suspended. We will be able to attend and participate in all Chiefs activities.
You gotta be kidding me!
Dial 617-779-7937.
Drive to center field. Jackie going back to the warning track by the fence, and this one's gone.
Oh, yeah.
Swinging his hammer deep to left. There it goes. Keon Broxton connects 15 rows back in left field.
Honestly, I just think it's trash.
Now, it's time for Brian Barrett on WEEI.
All right, your phone number is 617-779-7937. If you want to give your take on the David Price Dennis Eckersley situation, certainly welcome to do so. Now, David Price is putting Rick Porcello into the position. Rick Porcello needs to win tonight in order for this team to have an opportunity to win a series against the Baltimore Orioles on Sunday. Okay, you need Rick Porcello to go out there and deliver a gem tonight, okay? You're relying on Rick Porcello, who's been beaten up in his last four starts. But, hey, don't worry. Alex Cora said they found something after the third inning the other night in Rick Porcello's start against the Blue Jays, and they were able to figure things out. Okay, well, why couldn't you figure that out, like the past three starts that he was sucking? So I'll believe it when I see it. And remember, even if Rick Porcello pitches well against the Orioles tonight, I don't want to hear after the game that they have figured things out with Rick Porcello, because until I see Rick Porcello go pitch against the Yankees and the Rays, I'm not going to believe that he figured something out if he figures something out against the Baltimore Orioles, okay? Because lately, what Rick Porcello's looked like is he's looked like somebody throwing batting practice, okay? So unless Rick Porcello goes out there against the Yankees or the Rays and pitches well, sorry, I'm not buying into him having a nice start against the Orioles. Half the guys on the team you haven't even heard of, okay? You haven't even heard of half these guys. In fact, if you look at this Red Sox team right now, you take the three highest paid players on the Red Sox, J.D. Martinez for this season, Rick Porcello for this season, and David Price for this season. They make more money than the entire Orioles roster, okay? So I'm not going to go nuts if Rick Porcello looks passable against a Baltimore Orioles team tonight. I'm not going to buy into the fact, oh, we found something with Rick. Okay, you found something with Rick. We've heard that countless times with different guys in the rotation this year. Oh, we found something. Okay, we heard that about Sale. Then he had two more bad starts. Then they found something again. Okay, I'm going to wait until these guys actually perform when they're playing significantly better competition than the Baltimore Orioles. All right, I want to get to this about the Celtics, though. So Brian Windhorst, who does the Hoop Collective podcast, you all know him. He's LeBron's boy from ESPN. So he was talking with Jackie McMullen and Tim McMahon on his podcast, and he had this to say about your Boston Celtics. I don't know if you heard this, but the Celtics were, from what I'm told, one of the teams that kind of stomped their feet about what they felt was tampering. Not with Kyrie, although that looked like it was lined up pretty far in advance, but with Horford. What happened with Horford, again, from what I'm told, really upset the Celtics. They were thinking they were going to be able to negotiate with him, talked to him about a new contract, and all of a sudden, it was like he already knew what his market was, and he was out there, end quote. So that's what Brian Windhorst is saying. So Brian Windhorst is saying he heard that the Celtics were upset with the way that things went down with the Al Horford contract situation and the way that other teams were approaching Al Horford. So do you share the Celtics' sympathy? 617-779-7937. I told you, I really hope that this isn't true with the Celtics, that they were upset that other teams were talking to Al Horford. We do realize this is the NBA in 2019, right? We do realize, like, this is kind of how the thing operates. There's no such thing as tampering in the NBA. There isn't. Okay, Magic Johnson gets a tampering fine for making a comment about Paul George on a late night show. This is where we live in the NBA world nowadays. Everybody's recruiting everybody else's players. You literally had a player in Kawhi Leonard who called Paul George and told Paul George, hey, man, ask for a trade. Okay, so when free agency is approaching, this is what happens. You realize that the Clippers had a scout at every single one of Kawhi Leonard's games this season just to show like they had a presence there, that they were looking at Kawhi Leonard, that they were supporting Kawhi Leonard. This is what happens in the NBA. I don't feel bad for the Celtics whatsoever that the 76ers were talking to Al Horford's representatives before they were properly given the time to do it. Who cares? Who cares? I don't care about the stupid NBA tampering rules, okay? There's this moratorium period or whatever until you can sign the deal. Well, all right, how about the Celtics then? How did Kemba Walker just agree to go to the Celtics like right on whatever it was, June 30th, July 1st, whenever free agency began? Because the Celtics have been working on Kemba Walker when they realized that, oh, he wasn't going to get a deal done with Charlotte. Well, once Philadelphia realizes like, oh, maybe Al Horford doesn't want to go back to the Celtics, what do you think's going to happen? You think they're going to like bug these people's phones? This is how this situation happens. If this is actually true, if the Celtics are actually legitimately upset that teams were talking to Al Horford, shame on them. I mean, that's pathetic. And the other thing I would say to that is this. Didn't we just hear Danny Ainge and company say the other day when they were introducing their new players that Kemba Walker and Enes Kanter were plan A? Isn't that what we heard? That once free agency began, Kemba Walker and Enes Kanter were plan A. So why are you so upset about Al Horford then? Why would you be upset about other teams talking about Al Horford if Enes Kanter was plan A? That makes no sense to me whatsoever. So you're going to acknowledge that it wasn't plan A to go after Enes Kanter? Well, that would make a whole lot more sense because Enes Kanter is somebody that is a DH on a basketball court. He plays no defense whatsoever. He just came off a four-year, $70 million contract, okay? The New York Knicks didn't want this guy. They cut him in the middle of the season. The reason they couldn't trade Enes Kanter is because nobody wanted to give up anything of value for Enes Kanter because he was considered to be a negative value on his contract. Okay, the Portland Trailblazers acquired Enes Kanter after he was bought out by the New York Knicks to be a backup center. That's why they went out and got Enes Kanter. Okay, so he's a guy that nobody in the league would trade for because he had a horrible contract. And the one team that picked him up last year after he was bought out, they picked him up to be a backup center. That's what his role in the NBA is. It is a backup center. But apparently for the Celtics, it was plan A. Kemba Walker got on Danny Ainge's phone. He said, hey, we got to make sure that we get Enes Kanter into this team, into this organization. That's who we need. We need to go after Enes Kanter. And my God, it's unbelievable how everybody is buying into Enes Kanter, hook, line, and sinker. Everybody loves Enes Kanter in this town because he trolled Kyrie. Great. He trolled Kyrie. Wait till you see him play defense in a pick and roll situation. Then you'll see if it's so funny that Enes Kanter was trolling Kyrie about wearing his number and trolling Kyrie about the commercial that Kyrie's in.
I want to be the reason that no one else will.
Yeah, everybody bought into that. Now I saw that Enes Kanter on Twitter, he is doing something with Taco Fall. They're having a meal together today. He said it was a cheat day and him and Taco Fall were having dinner together. That's where we're at though as Celtics fans now. We're getting so super psyched up about having a troll in Enes Kanter in the starting lineup this season. Yeah, congratulations. He's trolling Kyrie Irving on Twitter. Unbelievable to me. And now Al Horford's playing for the Philadelphia 76ers, and you got Enes Kanter. Okay, so now if you look at it from the Philadelphia 76ers perspective, they have two centers in their starting lineup that are better than anybody in your lineup whatsoever. That's the reality of it. That's the world that we are now living in. The Celtics don't have one center that is better than Al Horford or Joel Embiid. And you used to have a guy that you could rely on in Al Horford in a playoff situation that could actually defend Joel Embiid, and now you don't have that guy. And it's amazing to me how Celtics fans have just completely transformed their opinion of Al Horford. Because what I kept hearing from Celtics fans throughout the season was, oh, you don't understand how great Al Horford is. Great plus-minus guy. Look at his defensive rating. Look at the leadership. All this different type of stuff with Al Horford. Great team guy, great passer, and all that different type of stuff. I kept hearing that all season long with Celtics fans. But then when he signs with the Philadelphia 76ers on that huge contract worth like $97 million, he can make up to like $109 if he reaches his bonuses and whatnot. All I'm hearing now from Celtics fans as it pertains to the Al Horford situation is, well, you know, you don't want to give Al Horford that type of money. Well, hold on. You don't want to give Al Horford this type of money. When did you change your opinion on the guy? Because all I've heard from Celtics fans over the past 3 years is about how valuable Al Horford is. And everybody wanted Al Horford back until Al Horford decided to go to Philadelphia. And now that the Philadelphia 76ers sign Al Horford to this big contract, oh, now it's a bad contract. Okay, well, what about the contract he was just with the Celtics? Because he was on a max contract with the Celtics, that wasn't a bad contract, but now that he's with Philadelphia, it's bad. Oh, because he's a little bit older now. That's why it's a bad contract. Well, let me tell you this. Okay, yeah, sure. Ideally, do you want to be signing Al Horford for 4 years? No. But at the end of that contract, if the Philadelphia 76ers, in year one or year two of this, play in an NBA Finals, and Al Horford is playing a pivotal role on that Philadelphia 76ers team, isn't that contract going to be worth it? for the Philadelphia 76ers. If Al Horford is a key contributor to a team that goes to the Eastern Conference Finals and they take down the Milwaukee Bucks, and Horford plays a pivotal role on playing defense on Giannis in the postseason, and if Al Horford has a couple of big threes in a big game and he's playing his 32 minutes a game in the postseason, won't that contract be worth it for Philadelphia? So I just don't understand why everybody now is saying, like, yeah, you don't really want to give Al that type of money. Well, I look at an Eastern Conference right now that since Kawhi Leonard has left, it looks like it's wide open, right? Now, Milwaukee is probably the favorite coming into the season because you have the reigning defending MVP in Giannis Antetokounmpo, and that team is still pretty good, although they did lose Malcolm Brogdon. So even the best team in the East from a year ago during the regular season lost one of its key contributors. So they're supposed to be the favorites, but on paper, they're worse than they were a season ago because they don't have Malcolm Brogdon, who, if you go back to that Toronto series, he was their second best player on the floor. You look at Toronto, obviously, they're no longer a threat. Kawhi Leonard now resides in the Western Conference. And then when you look at Philadelphia, you could make the argument that they're not as good as they were a season ago. Now, they're good. They're a lot better than the Celtics on paper, but they lost Jimmy Butler. You could make the argument that the Sixers with Jimmy Butler are better than the Sixers with Al Horford. But the point being, if you have Al Horford still on this Celtics team, you look at the way that the East has kind of fixed itself, so to speak, or the East has changed. So Brogdon out in Milwaukee. With the 76ers, you have Jimmy Butler going to Miami. No matter what happens, that Al Horford had nothing to do with Jimmy Butler going to Miami. Jimmy Butler's just a weird dude. Nobody knows what makes that guy tick. So he's finally on a team that had a chance to win a championship after for years saying he wanted to compete, and then he goes to South Beach. No idea what Jimmy Butler's thinking, but nonetheless, that should have been an advantage for the Celtics. So if you're looking at a team, and I get that from a salary cap perspective, it would have been tough to do, but if you still had Al Horford, because remember, the day that all this was going down in terms of the free agency, the rumor was, the reports were from a lot of NBA experts, the Celtics were trying to get the necessary salary cap space to keep Al Horford and get Kemba Walker. So if you think about it from that perspective, if you still have Al Horford and you're able to work out a sign and trade to be able to bring in somebody like Kemba Walker, so if you have Kemba, Al Horford, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward, etc., you're starting to feel pretty good about your Celtics. You're starting to feel like, oh, maybe this is a threat because you just think about it. All right, so you replace Kyrie Irving with Kemba, and essentially you have most of the same team coming back. Then you're starting to feel pretty good about the Celtics. But the problem with the Celtics is this. Now you look at it, Horford was the bigger loss for this team. Horford was the big loss because you didn't replace Al Horford. It's like we talk about it all the time with the Red Sox as it pertains to the bullpen. It's not the fact that you lost Kimbrel and you lost Joe Kelly. It's the fact that you didn't put any resources into replacing those guys. Now you look at the resources that Danny Ainge put into the center position. Robert Williams is only in year two. And he looks like a guy right now, and I get it, he had a nice little run in the summer league there, but he looks like a guy that is still learning how to play the game. You can't rely on Robert Williams to be a key contributor to this team in terms of high-level basketball. You're hoping he can develop into that player, but you can't depend on it. And then you bring in Enes Kanter that plays no defense whatsoever. So the biggest loss for this team was not Kyrie Irving, because at least Kemba Walker, even if you want to argue like I would that Kyrie Irving is the better player, you could argue that Kemba's 90% of what Kyrie does from a basketball standpoint, and then maybe he elevates things from a cultural standpoint, if you will. But at least that's somewhere where you say, yeah, Kemba's close to Kyrie. He at least lives in the same neighborhood as Kyrie Irving. Enes Kanter is nowhere near the neighborhood that Al Horford lives in. So that turns out to be the biggest loss for the Celtics, is you don't have Al Horford anymore. So you would have thought, with the way the Eastern Conference kind of opened up with Brogdon leaving Milwaukee and Kawhi leaving Toronto, the biggest gaping issue with this team is the center position. And now they don't have a competent guy at that position going forward. And that's what Brad Stevens and company are going to have to figure out. And the way that they trotted Enes Kanter out the other day, like celebrating the signing of Enes Kanter, I thought that was flat out embarrassing. I thought that was flat out embarrassing for this organization. A team that a season ago thought it was going to be competing for championships for years to come, with the young core they have and with the stars they had, they thought they were going to compete for the long term. And the fact that you had Enes Kanter, and I get a lot of teams do it this way, but why the hell is Enes Kanter in the same press conference as Kemba Walker? Kemba Walker is a star enough to get his own press conference. And I get that Kemba Walker, it's not like he would demand his own press conference. Like Kyrie Irving probably would demand his own press conference. But nonetheless, when you look at it from the Cantor perspective, Cantor should never be mentioned in the same breath as Kemba Walker. Like, this should not be the offseason that you got Kemba Walker and Enes Kanter. This is the offseason that things fell apart for the Celtics. Kyrie Irving decided to bolt. So your master plan that you had, if you were Danny Ainge, to get Anthony Davis here, you couldn't do that anymore because you had no assurances. In fact, you were told that Anthony Davis was going to leave, so you couldn't make that deal. So you couldn't do the dream of what you've had for so many years, which was acquiring Anthony Davis. That dream fell through, so you couldn't do that. And now you're in an offseason where, okay, at least you got something in here to replace Kyrie and Kemba Walker. That's the only thing you should be celebrating, is the signing of Kemba Walker. Enes Kanter just kind of happened, right? There was two teams that were after Enes Kanter, the Portland Trailblazers and the Boston Celtics. And the Celtics were acting like the other day, like this is something to celebrate, the fact that you signed Enes Kanter. He's on a two-year, $10 million contract with an opt-out after the second year. If this guy was a legitimate NBA starting center, he would have gotten a raise after his last contract. This is a guy that was playing on a $70 million contract. Usually guys that are entering the prime years of their career, which Enes Kanter from an age perspective should be entering the prime years of his career. Usually what happens to those guys, if you know they're quality NBA players, they get raises. Instead, now Enes Kanter is actually making significantly less money. So I just look at the Celtics team in totality. The thing that I want to find out is how good are Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. That's the number one thing I want to find out this season, is how good are those guys? Because if those guys, if one of them pops, right, because we saw them both have a successful postseason a couple of years ago, if one of those guys pops and we start to think about Jason Tatum the way we did after the postseason a couple of years ago, no matter what else happens with this team, okay, say they end up with a 5 or the 6 seed, whatever it is, but if Jason Tatum goes out there and he's averaging 23, 24 points per game and he's doing it on a decent efficiency numbers, if you will, if he's shooting closer to 50% from the field and his three-point percentage is closer to 40 this year like it was in his rookie season, and he's developing into an all-star type player, then I don't even care where the Celtics finish in the standings, because then I'm saying, all right, now you have a superstar that you can build around for the future. Because we've seen the Celtics aren't going to be able to sign big-level free agents. For years, we've seen that. Even when you traded for guys that you thought were superstars, like Kyrie Irving, he didn't want to stay here. So it seems like your path to actually having a superstar here is drafting one. So your hopes are Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So I don't care where the record is. I don't care how this team finishes in the standings. If one of those guys develops, Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, into what you thought you were getting out of the number three overall selections in the draft, then I'll consider this season to be a success. Okay? If Jason Tatum has another season like he did a year ago, if Jaylen Brown has another season like he did a year ago, and quite frankly, I don't put it all on Jaylen Brown in terms of his numbers were fine. Part of the reason his development was halted last year is the head coach, for whatever reason, never allowed him to win his starting job back and put him in the doghouse because apparently he wasn't performing well, yet Marcus Morris could keep his job the whole season after he went back into the starting lineup and he sucked for 3 months. That made no sense to me whatsoever. So a lot of it is on Brad Stevens, but I need to find out if Jaylen Brown can develop into that type of guy.
You know, I mean, I tried to do the best I could with the cards that was dealt.
Yeah. Damn right. I mean, Jaylen Brown got screwed over more so than anybody else on this team last year with the way Brad Stevens handled him. I mean, you make him into a spot-up shooter at the beginning of the season. What the hell was that? That's not what Jaylen does. He can shoot a three, but you want to use his athleticism. You want him going downhill to the hole. I mean, he goes to the basket hard. That's what I want to see more from Jaylen Brown than sitting out in the corner. So hopefully, Brad Stevens goes back into his laboratory this year and they develop more sets for Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Because right now, those are the two most important pieces of this franchise going forward. Because Kemba Walker, it's nice. It's a nice save. It's nice from a PR standpoint that you got a guy from a personality standpoint that is the complete opposite of Kyrie Irving. So it's nice from that perspective. It's a nice story. We've seen that he wants to be here. He even called Antoine Walker to see if he could wear his number 8. And hey, you don't have to change your old Antoine Walker uniform, so you can just wear the number 8 because it says Walker on it, okay? So there's that perspective that Kemba wants to be here. Everybody seems to be buying into the Kemba hype because Kemba seems to be this great teammate and this great leader. He said the other day he's happy that people are actually paying attention to him now that he's playing for a relevant franchise. So there's all that with Kemba. But the Kemba storyline is not as important as the Jason Tatum and the Jaylen Brown storylines are. Those are the pieces that you need to see if they can pop and they can develop into legitimate bona fide NBA superstars. Because what we've seen with Kemba Walker throughout his career, he's a really good player. He's an all-star level player, but he's never going to be the piece that puts your franchise over the top. And that's what you hope you have with Jason Tatum and with Jaylen Brown. So that's the thing that I'm looking forward to seeing from this team this year, seeing if one of those guys can actually pop and seeing if Gordon Hayward can get back to being a legitimate NBA player again. And I'm sorry, I don't want to keep hearing from members of the Celtics staff, members of the coaching staff like Brad Stevens talking about how Gordon Hayward's up early working out. Don't tease us with that crap, because all last year we saw like times where Gordon Hayward looked like the old Gordon Hayward, like Minnesota. Every time they played Minnesota, he'd have like 30 points. He had a nice little streak there before the All-Star break. He played well against the Pistons and played well against the 76ers. Don't tell me anything about Gordon Hayward. I want no updates about Gordon Hayward whatsoever. Until I actually see Gordon Hayward perform on the court, I'm not buying into the Gordon Hayward magic, okay? Because I was doing it all season long. I was guilty of it. I was like, all right, here he goes. 30 against Minnesota, starting to feel it. Playing well against Detroit and Philly, starting to feel it with Gordon Hayward. And then he'd take a massive step back. So until I actually see Gordon Hayward be the Utah Gordon Hayward on the court, I'm not buying into it. So all these updates we're getting from the Celtics, oh, he's in much better shape. He's getting up super early. Brad Stevens said, you got to get up real early if you want to see Gordon Hayward. I'm not buying into any of that crap until I actually see the guy on the court. And it's nothing against Gordon Hayward. I understand he went through a catastrophic injury, so I'm not ripping Gordon Hayward. I just don't want to get caught up in the hype again, because I was a victim of that last year. I'm sure a lot of you were. I don't want to be caught up in that. 617-779-7937 is your number. If you want to weigh in on the David Price situation, certainly welcome to do that. If you have any thoughts on the Celtics, you can weigh in on that as well. I want to get to a comment that a certain NFL expert made against about the Patriots. Very interesting stuff, and it has me feeling positive about the Patriots. I'll get into that in just a little bit. Before we do that, I'll get you trending. All right, if you want to hop on board, number 617-779-7937, a lot on the table. Chatting about the Celtics, Enes Kanter, the way they celebrated Enes Kanter being introduced the other day was absolutely embarrassing. Him trolling Kyrie Irving. Sorry, dude. You don't have the stones, okay? You don't have the resume to call out Kyrie Irving. I guess he does have the stones, but you don't have the resume to be able to do that. That was a joke to me. But anyway, the Celtics, that was their plan A. Enes Kanter, okay, who one other team in the NBA wanted, the Portland Trail Blazers. And he lied about the Portland Trail Blazers. He said they only gave him 6 minutes to make his decision. Not true. Damian Lillard was literally in the front office, or in the office, if you will, when they were actually talking to Kanter. It was a lie. The guy just came out and he lied about the situation. But this is your guy now because he trolled Kyrie Irving. Let's celebrate the fact that you're no longer contenders, but hey, you got a guy that will troll Kyrie Irving. Congratulations to the Celtics fans. Really, really, this is a big win, getting Enes Kanter in here. Also, if you want to weigh in on the David Price situation, you can do that as well. I want to get to something that Mike Lombardi said in just a second as it pertains to your New England Patriots. But real quick, on the text line, I got this about Kemba Walker. You don't know if Kemba can be a leader and put the team on the top, because, or over the top, I think he means to say, because now he's on an actual great team. So first of all, I never said that Kemba couldn't be a leader. I never said that Kemba couldn't be a leader. In fact, that's like one of the things that drew the Celtics towards Kemba Walker, right? He's the opposite of Kyrie Irving. Everybody in the locker room likes Kemba Walker. I never said anything about Kemba Walker not being a leader. I said he's not the guy that can lead you to a championship. This is just basic history. Your best player can't be your point guard if you're like a championship contender, especially not a small, diminutive point guard. Didn't we just find that out with Kyrie Irving? Didn't we just find that out? Look through the history of this sport. The only small point guards that have been the best players on championship teams, Steph Curry in 2015, and remember, he wasn't the best player on the last two Warrior championship teams. Steph Curry just so happened to also be what? Oh, yeah, the greatest shooter in the history of the damn sport, okay? So that's one small point guard. The other small point guard was Isaiah Thomas in the late 80s and 1990 when they won the championship. Those are the only two small point guards in the history of this sport that have actually led their teams to championships and been the best player on those teams. We're talking about small, diminutive guys. That's the only time that it's ever happened. Steph Curry, who's the greatest shooter ever, and Isaiah Thomas, who was on the Bad Boy Pistons, who caught the Celtics at the right time, at the end of their reign, if you will, and caught the Lakers at the right time, at the end of their reign, and that's before the Bulls really emerged, right? And then the Bulls ended up defeating Isaiah and company. And that's when Isaiah kind of, not that he took a backseat, but he started to get more guys involved. It was more of a team game than it was Isaiah dominating things. So the greatest shooter of all time, and Isaiah Thomas, a Hall of Famer. Those are the only two small point guards that have been the best players on championship caliber teams. Look at who runs the NBA. It's wing guys. Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, LeBron James. That's why I say Kemba Walker isn't the piece that puts you over the top. Anybody that thinks Kemba Walker is the piece that puts you over the top is absolutely Looney Tunes. You're crazy. Now, if you had a solid wing already and you added that guy, it would make sense. That's why I'm saying Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are significantly more important, because Kemba Walker is never going to be the guy that leads you to a championship. But there's hope that Jason Tatum could be that guy. There is hope. Remember, he was averaging 18 points a game in the postseason as a rookie. There's at least that glimmer of hope that Jason Tatum can emerge into this NBA superstar, although he's going to have to take a massive step forward after what happened to him a year ago. Got to get the bad habits out. Okay, no more long twos. God, stop taking those long twos. It's the most inefficient shot in basketball. He's got to stop doing that. He's got to get to the free throw line more. Only attempted 2.9 free throw attempts per game last year. Okay, you got to be living at the free throw line if you're one of these elite small forwards. And that's what Jason Tatum is chasing. He wants to get into that category. You look at the great small forwards in the league, and I'm not saying he has to get to this level yet. LeBron, Kawhi, Durant, Paul George, all those guys, at least 7 free throw attempts per game last season. Now, I'm not saying you expected that from Tatum last year, because he was the number 2 option behind Kyrie. But can you get to 5? De'Aaron Fox in his second year was at 5. Donovan Mitchell was at 5 last year. So now that Jason Tatum will be a featured member of the offense again, that's something that they have to work into his system. Dude, get to the free throw line, okay? And stop taking long twos. That's something that Brad Stevens and company have to drill into Jason Tatum. And maybe Jason Tatum learned from last year, because clearly he took a step back and really a ton of attention was on Jason Tatum heading into the season. A lot of people were buying into Jason Tatum. Oh, he's going to be a 10-time All-Star. He could be a future MVP. Maybe some of that got into his head. Working out with Kobe Bryant doing a detail thing on him on ESPN. Maybe some of that got to Jason Tatum's head. Maybe he can take some of the mistakes and some of the bad habits he developed last year and use them as motivation. Because I have to believe that even though him and Kyrie Irving were apparently boys, that going forward, this situation has to kind of motivate Jason Tatum, right? Because he's like, all right, Al's no longer here. Kyrie Irving's no longer here. Those are like the two biggest name guys on our team, because Hayward hasn't been the same Hayward since the injury. Yeah, we bring in Kemba Walker, and Jason Tatum, of course, played a role in recruiting him. But now this can actually become my team. I have to imagine that Jason Tatum is motivated by that fact. So that's why I say that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are the two most important pieces on this franchise, because Kemba Walker is never leading you to a championship. Maybe he can help develop Jason Tatum into that great player, but he's never going to be the best player on a championship team. We know this, and not to mention, he's not even like one of the top 3 to 4 point guards in the league right now. Okay, that's the reality of where Kemba Walker lives. Nice player, but he's never putting you over the top. All right, I wanted to get to this. So interesting comments earlier this week from Mike Lombardi, and he works for Brett Musburger's network. It's VISN. I don't know if it's pronounced VISN or if it's just VISN. Anyway, it's like a gambling network. They do radio shows every day, 24/7 and whatnot. And here was Mike Lombardi talking about the Patriots.
I think the question is going to be, can they get this offense changed to where they changed last year? Everybody talks about Gronk coming back or what Gronk. They were not a tight end-oriented offense last year, partly because the two best tight ends blocked Gronk and Dwayne Allen. And so that helped their running game. So they utilized their skill set. And I think when everybody zigs, Belichick zags.
Okay, so that's interesting. So that's Mike Lombardi, who of course used to work for the Patriots, saying essentially when everybody else zigs, Bill Belichick zags. And this makes sense to me, because if you look at it, okay, you go back to 2017 with the Patriots, they were 10th in the NFL in rushing yards. They averaged 118 a game. They were 11th in attempts in 2017 at 448. You fast forward to 2018, so last season, they were 5th in rushing yards. They jumped up to 127 yards per game, so 9 more than a season ago. But they were 3rd in attempts. So they went from 11th in attempts to 3rd in attempts. They went all the way up to 478 rushing attempts for the season, which was 30 more than the previous season. And if you look at the playoffs, they even ran the football more. Okay, the Chiefs game, 48 carries, 176 yards. Chargers game, 34 attempts, 155 yards. Even the Rams game, the Super Bowl, where the offense was not great, they ran for 154 yards in that game. 32 rushing attempts. So for the postseason, They were the best rushing team in the entire league. Remember, Sony Michel, 6 touchdowns. He was tremendous in the postseason. Okay, so what Mike Lombardi's saying makes a ton of sense. And if you look at the past couple of drafts, Sony Michel, first-round pick 2 years ago. Who else was a first-round pick that year? Oh, yeah, Isaiah Wynn. So you had an offensive lineman who I get didn't play last year, but now he will be this season. Isaiah Wynn, an offensive lineman. Sony Michel, a running back. This year, you put more resources into the running back position where you draft Damian Harris in the third round. So in terms of what Mike Lombardi's saying, Bill Belichick tends to zig when everybody else is zagging or zags when everybody else is zigging, whatever that expression is. I always get confused by that. But nonetheless, you think about it from a couple of different criterias. Defensive lines in the NFL are getting significantly smaller, right? We've noticed that. Like, look at a guy like Ed Oliver, who was drafted in the first round this year. Played in college at 280. He's a defensive tackle. We don't have the Casey Hamptons of the world anymore playing at 325, right? Just those enormous human beings. So remember, Bill Belichick was ahead of everybody with the passing game. Remember, he saw the Rams and what they were doing, the greatest show on turf, and he said, all right, that's a market inefficiency. We can get these smaller receivers, and we can essentially use our passing game as our running game, right? So for all these years, they had Welker and Edelman and Danny Amendola, all these guys that could create after the catch, and you could use that passing game, the short passing game, as your running game. So you didn't need to put a lot of resources into your running game. Because remember, like from 05 to really over the past couple of years, the Patriots have not had a great running offense. Now, they've been productive, they've been honest, but they've never been a really a dominant running offense really since early on in Brady's career. Okay, so now Belichick sees, okay, this is a new market inefficiency, if you will. Because all these teams, what they're doing, look at how these NFL teams have been built over the past couple of years. The modern day linebacker is like Deion Jones of the Atlanta Falcons, right? Where he's basically a safety in the old NFL, but you need him to be able to cover tight ends, cover slot receivers maybe, cover backside of the backfield in terms of catching passes. So teams have morphed into more smaller defenses, if you will, because of the fact that the league has gone more pass heavy than it's ever been. So what Belichick has now discovered is, okay, well, all these defensive lines are significantly smaller. The linebackers are significantly smaller, right? You don't have a ton of linebackers in the old Ray Lewis mode, if you will, right? Those big, huge linebackers. It's more of the athletic guys, like the Deion Joneses of the world. Even like a Bobby Wagner, right? It's not super huge, massive guys anymore. So what Bill Belichick is doing, he's saying, all right, well, if all these teams are gearing up to stop the passing game, that means I can take advantage of you in the running game. And they drafted a tackle in the first round a couple of years ago. They've drafted two running backs in the first three rounds over the past couple of seasons. And they're saying to themselves, okay, we can take advantage of it from a running game perspective. So look, I'm concerned about the weapons that Tom Brady has at his disposal because there's not a lot of them. But in another category, if you will, or in another conversation, I can look at what Bill Belichick's doing and say, oh, yeah, that kind of makes sense. That kind of makes sense. So they're going to take advantage of these small defensive lines. They're going to take advantage of these small linebackers, if you will. Remember the Chargers, right? The Chargers game is the perfect example. They were playing six defensive backs the whole time. And Josh McDaniels and Tom Brady are just like, all right, well, we're just going to run the ball right down your throat. And Brady's the best quarterback in the history of the NFL to do this, right? Because what they can do also is they can dominate time of possession. They can slow things down. And Brady can figure everything out at the line of scrimmage. And he can hand it off to Michel, hand it off to Damian Harris. And they can pick up 5 yards a carry that way because all these other teams are smaller than them. And they dominate time of possession as well. That's what they did so well against the Chiefs. They kept Pat Mahomes off the field. Now, they came up with a great game plan for the first half of that game, but then in the second half, Pat Mahomes kind of got it going. But what goes not as noticed in that game is how much the Patriots are on the field, okay? The Patriots made sure that, to use a basketball cliche, they dribbled the air out of the ball, right? They just wanted to stay on the field and keep Pat Mahomes on the sideline. So when we see some of these teams in the AFC, the Chiefs, we know, especially with the Tyreek Hill situation that he's going to be playing, that's going to be a high-flying offense again. Indianapolis with Andrew Luck, that's going to be a high-flying offense. The Chargers, again, they're going to have a team that's a high-flying offense. The Patriots are saying, all right, we can dominate you in the running game, and our defense is going to be much improved from where it was a season ago as well. So Belichick discovering another thing in terms of he's ahead of everybody else. Okay, the Patriots are going to be a dominant run offense this season. Now, that still doesn't make everything right with this team from an offensive perspective. It still concerns me that at the age of 42, you go into a season with Tom Brady where literally you can only give me one guy. You can give me one guy that you can say for sure, you can depend on going into the season. And that's Julian Edelman. Nobody else I'll accept the answer on. N'Keal Harry, you're hoping. But again, he's a rookie. Now, I understand he's really talented, but again, he's a rookie. Okay, you look at the other guys on this team. Demaryius Thomas, yeah, nice name, but he's coming off an Achilles tear. Maurice Harris, you didn't know who he was until the Patriots signed him. You can't tell me that guy. Dontrell Inman, the Colts didn't want him, right? Braxton Berrios, you're hoping he can contribute as a second-year guy after missing his rookie season. But you can't tell me that there's a legitimate guy after Julian Edelman that you know for sure is going to perform at a high level this season. Ben Watson, he's missing the first four games for a PED suspension. Numbers were down last season. You can't tell me you're depending on that guy at the age of 38. So, yeah, it feels good that Bill Belichick, again, is ahead of every other team in the NFL because they're going to dominate in the running game when it's easier to run the football this year than it's been in previous seasons. Way easier to run the football now than it's ever been. That's why Belichick's taking advantage of that. But you can't tell me that you feel great about the Patriots receiving core coming into the season. And you can't tell me outside of Julian Edelman, one guy you can depend on in the passing game. And I'm not talking about James White out of the backfield because we know what he can do. In fact, I'd rather see James White line up in the slot than some of the other guys you got here. I'd rather James White, heck, line up wide than some of the other guys you get here. And the reason I know that this is a problem is because Bill Belichick thought it was a problem, right? He wanted Adam Humphries. He wanted Cole Beasley, but he didn't land any of those guys. So when Bill Belichick knows it's a problem, that means you should think it's a problem. All right, we can continue to talk about this. What do you think about the Patriots entering the 2019 season? Do you think their running game will be one of the most dominant running games in the NFL? Is that what Belichick's doing with the way he's building his roster? 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you right here on WEI.
93.7 FM, WEEI.
All right, it's starting to become funny to me because it used to be that there was a couple of guys that were like hating on Brady. Brian Barrett with you for the next 10, 11 minutes or so, and we'll turn it over to Will Fleming, who's got Red Sox pregame coming up at the top of the hour as the Red Sox get ready for the O's with Rick Porcello on the mound. But nonetheless, it used to be like there was a couple of guys, right? Rob Parker and Max Kellerman. They were like the Brady haters. Now it's almost like everybody just wants to hate on Brady and put him lower in their quarterback rankings, if you will. Remember Dan Hansis from NFL.com? Earlier in the week, he had Brady outside of the top 10 of his quarterbacks. He had 10 superstar quarterbacks in the league, and Brady wasn't one of them. Deshaun Watson in, Brady out. That was the headline of his article. It's like, hold on. First of all, the math makes no sense on that. So there's 10 superstar quarterbacks in the league. There's only 32 teams. So 10 of them are superstars. And you have 10 superstars, but one of them isn't Tom Brady. I mean, it's just ludicrous. It's like, I want to see some of these guys be more creative. Because now everybody just hates on Brady. Like, somebody else come up with another quarterback to go after. Like, how about the fact that Aaron Rodgers sucked last year? He completed 62% of his passes. Aaron Rodgers is now 36. He's had two consecutive down years, and he's been injured. I get it, but that's part of the point. The guy is breaking down. He has less playoff wins than Joe Flacco. Yet nobody in the national media will ever say anything negative about Aaron Rodgers. Nobody. Nobody says anything negative about Aaron Rodgers. Can you imagine what would have happened with the Patriots if they went 6-9-1 last year like Aaron Rodgers did? You think he'd be getting all the excuses that Aaron Rodgers gets with Brady? Oh, well, Mike McCarthy wasn't a great coach. They had to get rid of Mike McCarthy. They don't have a great roster. Really? Because I heard Tom Brady getting criticized after they beat the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. Well, he would have thrown a pick if a guy wasn't offside. Well, he was offside. It's kind of how the sport works. But everybody wants to defend Aaron Rodgers, but Brady, it's fine. Everybody goes at Brady. Same thing with Drew Brees. Like, we all realize, like, nobody talks about the fact that Drew Brees actually sucked in the NFC Championship game. We all think about, oh, the call at the end of the game. Think about it from this perspective. If Drew Brees, or rather, if Brady was Drew Brees in that game. Okay, so Drew Brees and the Saints got screwed over by that non-pass interference call, right? What if that was Brady in that game? And Brady threw the interception in overtime like Brees did. Oh, yeah, you probably didn't remember that Brees threw an interception because the national media never wants to bring that up. Brees had the ball first in overtime with an opportunity to win the game, and he threw an interception. Nobody talks about that. All anybody talked about after that game was the fact that they were screwed. If that was Brady, it would have been, oh, Brady's aging, Brady's done. So for whatever reason, everybody goes after Brady. It's like, can somebody be unique? Can somebody be unique? Can somebody else pick a new quarterback they want to go after? Somebody be the anti-Rodgers guy. Somebody be the anti-Breeze guy. Because everybody's the anti-Brady guy. It's not original anymore. Like, at least when Rob Parker started doing this crap, it was original. The Loat, like, that was original. Now, Rob Parker's an idiot for the comments he makes, but at least he's original. At least give him that. Max Kellerman will never admit he was wrong, but at least he was somewhat original. Now all these other people with these stupid lists, I mean, it makes no sense to me whatsoever. All right, I also wanted to touch on this Tyreek Hill situation. So there's that 11-minute tape out there, and that's what the NFL is saying, why they decided not to use Tyreek Hill, because of the tape they listened to. Now, this is what I'll say. The NFL conduct policy, if you will, says that a player can be suspended if, quote, actual or threatened physical violences are determined. Okay, so apparently some of the stuff is, if you listen to that tape, there's some odd stuff with his girlfriend as well in terms of what she's saying. But he did on the tape say this: you need to be terrified of me, bleep. Okay, so he threatened her. He said, you need to be terrified of me, bleep. Okay, that's after she said that your son is scared of you. That was his response, Tyreek Hill's response. Okay, we also know that he pled guilty to the issue in 2014. We know that this happened, okay? So, or at least we know he pled guilty to it. So the NFL decided not to suspend Tyreek Hill this week. And oh, by the way, the most typical NFL thing ever, they dump it on a Friday afternoon, all right? But here's the other thing I would say to this. First of all, it's a joke they didn't suspend the guy. We all know this, but I want to get to this. Why did you expect that Roger Goodell, why did anybody expect that Roger Goodell would actually get this thing right? This guy is the worst in the history of the world in handing out punishment in any line of work, okay? So he has this power where he has the ultimate power to essentially determine anybody who violates the personal conduct policy. The only suspensions this guy gets right are the ones that are actually written into the CBA. Like Julian Edelman, right? Violated the PED policy, 4-game suspension. Okay, Roger doesn't do anything for that. That's just what the rule is. He gets suspended for 4 games. Okay, makes sense. Okay, but all these other big-time suspensions that he's handed out, he's completely messed up. The Ray Rice situation, remember that? He suspends him 2 games, and then the video comes out. Even though they deny they saw the video before it came out, you knew that Ray Rice was accused of punching his then-fiance, now-wife, in the face. So he suspends Ray Rice 2 games, and then, I'm not trying to laugh at the situation, but then the video comes out, and he suspends him indefinitely. So then Ray Rice appeals the suspension, and they're like, well, Roger, listen, Raj, you can't suspend the guy twice for the same violation. So he tried to suspend him once for the same thing. Like, he suspended him 2 games for what he did to his ex, or then fiance, now wife, and then he suspended him again for the same thing because he hadn't seen the video yet. It's like, Roger, legally you can't do that, man. So the suspension got overturned. So the 2-game suspension looked too soft. And then he suspended him indefinitely, and he couldn't do that because he had already suspended him for 2 games. So, like, one of the most high-profile cases in the history of the sport, he couldn't handle that right. He messed it up on 2 different occasions. He messed it up from the beginning, and then he messed it up after that. So why would anybody believe that Roger Goodell would get a suspension right? It just makes no sense whatsoever. And then, I mean, do we have to rehash the Tom Brady situation? Deflategate? Okay. You literally had the NFL leaking to ESPN that 11 of the 12 footballs were deflated. When we all know the case, it was only one of them was under the proper PSI level, right? And not to mention the fact that the NFL just decided to ignore science. The only reason that that suspension was upheld is because Roger Goodell had the power. And they did this whole thing with the Wells report where they determined that Tom Brady was more likely than not that he knew the footballs were deflated. Okay, well, I think it's more likely than not that Tyreek Hill did something to his son. Don't you think we can all agree on that? It's more likely than not that Tyreek Hill did something to his son. So why would anybody think that Roger Goodell would get this thing right? How about the Saints Bounty Gate situation? They suspended Sean Payton for an entire season. For an entire season! They suspended Sean Payton for an entire year because his assistant coach, Greg Williams, was caught on film before the San Francisco 49ers game saying that you should go shred a guy's ACL. Okay? And because there could have been bounties for hits that the Saints were making in games, which Sean Payton didn't know about. You suspended a coach a year for that. And this guy, Tyreek Hill, who has a checkered past, to put it lightly, is on film saying, you should be scared of me, bleep. Okay? You should be terrified of me. After he was accused of hitting his son, of breaking his son's arm, after all that had transpired, you don't suspend him. That guy gets no suspension whatsoever. No suspension whatsoever for that guy. I mean, how clueless does this league look? And everybody say, well, you know, Roger Goodell makes the league money. That's why he still has a job. You realize that literally anybody could do Roger Goodell's job. Is it really that difficult? Is the NFL a tough product to sell? I mean, really, is it a tough product to sell? I mean, we act like Roger Goodell is making the NFL money, like he's the reason he's doing it. No, anybody running that league. Why is there no other issues with like most other commissioners in sports? There's no issues with Adam Silver. Rob Manfred, like his biggest issue is he doesn't promote the players enough. That's like the issue with Rob Manfred. Okay, great. This guy can't get a damn suspension right.
I mean, last season, Jimmy Smith was suspended for 4 games for threatening and emotional abuse of his former girlfriend.
Oh, Nick, that sounds familiar. Isn't that kind of what happened with Tyreek Hill?
Sounds it, doesn't it?
Oh, okay. And oh, by the way, Tyreek Hill has a checkered past where he pled guilty to a thing in 2014. But, oh, because the NFL listened to this 11-minute audio recording, they have determined that he shouldn't be suspended. Okay. Makes sense. Really, really makes sense to me. It's unbelievable. The incompetence. And how about the fact they drop it out on a Friday afternoon? So it could go into the weekend, then on Monday, nobody's going to be talking about it anymore. I would say this also, though, as it pertains to this situation. And no matter what side of the aisle you're on politically, you notice like anytime something happens with the president, everybody attacks anything he says. Where are all like the defense groups with this? Where are all the talking heads with this situation? Because this guy pled guilty to domestic violence with his girlfriend at the time years ago. He could have broken his son's arm. It looks like it's more likely than not that he did that. Yet there's nobody like up in arms about this situation. It's just basically everybody calling Roger Goodell incompetent. This is unbelievable to me. Yeah, well, the Chiefs get Tyreek Hill back. So, yeah, really good guy. And you know what's going to happen with Tyreek Hill in the next couple of weeks? This dude's going to get a contract extension. That's what's going to happen. He's going to get a contract extension over the next couple of weeks. All right, thanks to Nick for producing this afternoon. Really appreciate it. We're going to turn things over to Will Fleming. He's got pregame coverage.